Manx Radio Sport.
A very good evening to our listeners on Manx Radio, AM 1368 and Crystal Clear, DAB. This is Saturday Sports Classified, our latest look at all the sporting action that has been taking place across the Isle of Man today, Saturday the 11th of May. Football to come, as well as motorsports and also the Commonwealth Games and a programme associated with it. But first, we can bring you the classified footballing results for Saturday the 11th of May 2024. The Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup semi-finals. Ayr United 1, Ramsey 3. Laxey 2, Peel 0. In DPS Limited, Division 2. Maloo vs Douglas High School All Boys is a late result. Foxdale 8, Governors Athletic 1. Gyms vs Castletown awarded as an away win to Castletown, Gyms unable to field a team. And in Canada Life, Combination 1. Braddon 3, Moran 2. Those are your classified footballing results for Saturday, the 11th of May, 2024. One result outstanding, as we've just mentioned then, Maloo versus Douglas High School All Boys in DPS Limited Division 2. If you do have any details of those, please do message us 166177. Well, at the moment, we are waiting the arrival of our football correspondent, Tony Meppham, who's been out at the Hospital Cup semi-final fixture between Ayr United and Ramsey today. He will be joining us in a few minutes' time. Before that, we'll stick with the footballing theme. And FC Isle of Man has announced it will be welcoming National League and Northern Premier League competition to the island this summer. The Ravens will host a festival of football in July to not only prepare themselves for the upcoming new season, but also with hopes to draw big crowds to the bowl. The club's vice chairman and director of football is Lee Dixon. He explains what's in store at the tournament and also his beliefs on how it could have wider benefits for the Isle of Man in a few months' time.
So we've got a festival of football, or a football festival, whatever you want to call it, happening on 19th, 20th and 21st of July on the island. We've got Chester FC, we've got Ratcliffe coming, and we've got Lancaster City visiting. And obviously there's going to be a tournament held. There'll be games on a Friday night, a Saturday and two on a Sunday, on what we hope will be the start of a new format of the old Steam Packet Festival, really.
And in terms of what you as a club and these clubs that are going to be taking part want to get out of it, what is the main aim?
The main aim is... From our perspective, and the reason I set this tournament up is, obviously you always get asked by people about what about the old Steam Packet Festival, what happened to it, why haven't we still got it? It bounces around like the same question as when we never had a football club. Why haven't we got a club, and Guernsey have got one, and blah, blah, blah. So obviously it's always in the back of your mind, and it's always something that you want to do, but with the amount of work that goes with running FC Isle of Man, it's always something that's hard to get around to. But literally going into the last week of the season, or I think it might have even been the week before, I just got this idea of contacting a few people, some of the clubs that are like the Phoenix clubs that have been Football League clubs and gone and then come back and fan-owned or community-owned clubs. And I thought I'll reach out to a few of them. So I went to Chester because they'd been in touch in previous seasons to come and never quite managed to make it happen. And straight away, they were really keen. I spoke with Ratcliffe Borough, and their management had been Chester's management in previous seasons when they wanted to come. So I half had an idea they'd be keen to come. So I contacted them, and within 24 hours, they'd said they were coming. Didn't even know what the tournament was about or anything, but they said we're coming. And then we'd been speaking to Dulwich Hamlet, were meant to come, who Peter Crouch had been the director of football of, and again, like a fan-owned club. So they were meant to be coming, and unfortunately, due to off-field circumstances, they've had to pull out. And it created an opportunity for Lancaster City to visit, who it geographically fits into the whole northwest area and where we're trying to target to bring people to the island from. So I think the one thing we all have in common is, I think we all massively understand how important the football club is within the community they are based in. And from speaking to the clubs and speaking to the people that run the clubs, we're all very much of the same ilk. You know, we all want to have experiences with our supporters so that it's a massive family thing. And I'm hoping that by bringing all them people together to the island in that one moment, that it'll enable us to start to grow something that can become massive in the future, I hope, and head back towards the old Steam Packet Festival that we always talk about. But I'd like to say that my target over the next 1, 2, 3 years wouldn't be to create it with professional teams. I want to keep it at non-league. I want to keep it involving them clubs that, like I said, are fan-owned, community-owned clubs who understand what we're about, and they have their own identity, to bring them together ultimately to become another one-week tournament where they visit the Isle of Man with all their fans, and there'd be a tournament played out over a week where each team would play 3 to 4 games of football, and obviously the benefits thereafter in our community for the economy, for the travel companies, for all the hospitality sector, can be astronomical.
If we're looking in terms of numbers, for example, no one has a crystal ball, but in your eyes, how many fans, for example, would you like to see coming over to the island for this tournament?
I would like to see, if it would be amazing if between the three teams they can bring 1,000 fans initially, which you're talking about the kind of numbers that Bury bring when they come, and everyone sees the impact that has on the island and around Douglas. And then when you go to the bowl and you see them all at one end and singing and chanting and doing their stuff, that would be the initial aim, I think. I think that would be a fantastic success if we can get 1,000. The numbers being banded around from Chester is they're hopeful that they might not be far off that in their own right. Ratcliffe Borough have just had an incredible season. Obviously, they've been promoted by, I think they won the league by 11 points in the end. They've been getting an average gate, I think, of about 1,800 or 1,900. They're talking probably close to 500 maybe. So they're all, listen, they're all figures that are just getting banded around at the minute. No one's going to know until it happens. But if we could get anywhere near 1,000 visiting the island, and we can get our usual 700 to 800 in the bowl, I think for pre-season games of football, I think that would be an incredible achievement initially.
The Isle of Man notoriously busy in the summer period with the road racing, which of course attracts, you know, huge numbers with the events there. But from the footballing side of things, if you were to get those sort of numbers, not just from a footballing spectacle perspective, but also of the benefits that it could potentially have for the local economy as well.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the benefits for the economy will be huge, albeit it is a busy time of the year anyway. But at the end of the day, it never has to be enough, does it? We can always add more people into the equation and make sure that every hotel, guest house is filled if possible. Going back to our figures from the season and the amount of bed nights we provide through the season, you're talking about we bring to the economy throughout the winter when it's bad. We're bringing circa £1.4 million into the economy, going off the government's own figures. If we can develop something that brings a similar amount in the summer from a tiny little football club that started from nothing by volunteers to maybe be pushing north of £2 million into the economy, I think would be an incredible achievement, you know, and something that we could never afford to lose. The more time goes by, hopefully, we can grow this thing and the numbers get bigger and bigger. Who knows where it can go? But as a first season, I think if we can bring 1,000 people here, I think you're talking £200,000 to £300,000 potentially into the economy. It'll be an incredible achievement, I think. And obviously the hotels, the guest houses, the B&Bs out there, everyone needs support. You know, the cost of living crisis in general is hit everybody. And so the more people we bring, the more support we give into the economy, the benefits will be noticed, I'm sure, by everybody.
And from the club perspective, I suppose, in a bigger picture sense, you know, FC Isle of Man's only been playing now competitively for 3 years, but how important is it that you're building these networks and relations with other clubs like Chester, like Ratcliffe, like Lancaster City and beyond as well, in terms of, you know, understanding what goes on inside this wider non-league and, let's say, National League pyramid?
Yeah, it's massive. I mean, when we started off, people visit the Isle of Man and they come on their trips and, you know, a lot of them have never been before, and they come, and it was obviously the recent, they've just done a recent survey, haven't they, which in the Northwest Counties League, the best away day, and we won by, I think we got 70% of the votes. Now that tells you something in itself about what we have to offer and what we can be to other people. But I think it's really, really important that we also network and build it with other teams, not just in our own league, but outside of that, so that we can go away and be treated as well as what we treat other people when they come here. Because the one thing that runs like a constant thread right through out everything and everyone that visits is how well they get looked after and how great the hospitality is and what a lovely island we have. Hopefully we start to get that replicated when we visit other teams, and it'll open doors to us going away maybe for pre-season friendlies or receiving support within that community. Use Kendall as a perfect example. The relationship we've managed to build with Kendall from them visiting the island and when they got stuck here and what we were able to do to support them, and how they replicated that when we stayed over with the whole team. We kept the club over there and all the fans stayed for the night, and we went on a night out in Kendall and they had live bands on in all the bars and they all had food on for the fans for free. You know, I think I don't think you can put a price on that, really, in terms of what we're starting to build. But we're 3 years into this journey, obviously, as a club, and we're starting to see massive traction now with other teams wanting or maybe starting to appreciate what we do when we bring them here. We're starting to see it replicated when we go the other way. There's been other teams, I think Prestwich Age were magnificent with our fans. I think they put free food on in one of the pubs and they had a night at the races after our game and stuff with our fans. And there's just so much that starts to happen, and you're starting to really see it developing now. And as time goes forward, it hopefully only gets bigger and bigger and more, and we get better and better relationships in our own league, but outside our league, like you said, in the national pyramid. And we start to put the Isle of Man on the map even more than what it already is with the TT racing and all the other sporting successes we have here. Hopefully FC Isle of Man is going to start bringing a lot to the party in terms of that as well, Rob.
And finally, just to talk about matters on the pitch, I guess, obviously the players, the coaching staff and a lot of people in the club are taking a well-earned break after the current season has ended. But looking at these teams that are coming over, you've got Chester in the National League system, both Radcliffe Borough and Lancaster City in the Northern Premier League system, you know, a level or two above FC Isle of Man at the moment. For the players, how important an experience will this be coming up against the quality of opposition they will be going into the next season?
Yeah, I think it's massive. Let me just add, Radcliffe have just been promoted. I don't want to take that away from them in case they hear this interview. Yeah, it's huge. So me and Paul were lucky enough to play in the festival. We played in the festival. I've only just seen the interview with Paul mentioned about when we beat Burnley on the bowl. Now, when you meet people who played in the festival and you talk about playing against professional people, professional players, it's an experience that now the new group I've never had. Some of them have because the likes of your Dean Pinningtons have been in professional clubs, and obviously we've got Adam Longaway who may come back in the future, but in general 99% of the lads have never had that experience to play against professional players on a sort of regular basis. As such, it was every summer play two or three games. To start introducing this level of football, take into account that teams in the National League now full time, because there's that, you know, the money's spilled down, there's full time teams. This is their opportunity to come up against players that are so far in advance of where we are, that gives them their experiences and then supports them in their growth. And obviously, Paul will hopefully reap the rewards going into next season and in future years, because the more you play year on year in the summer against these teams, it obviously helps you develop, helps your understanding of the game in so many different areas. So it's vitally important that these young lads start to get a feel for that. Going into the league gave us a little bit of that, but it was at a level that maybe wasn't too far ahead of us. Obviously, we've found ourselves in the league we're in now and we're adapting, and as time goes on, we're starting to come to terms with the challenges. And you've seen the running at the end of the season was fantastic, and it puts us in a really good position, hopefully, to launch ourselves into next season and try and aim towards the playoffs.
That is FC Isle of Man Vice Chairman and Director of Football Lee Dixon on the FC Isle of Man Summer Festival of Football, which is confirmed to be taking place at the Bowl in Douglas from the 19th to the 21st of July. If you want to hear about the fixture details, they are as follows. On Friday the 19th of July, so the opening evening of the event, sees FC Isle of Man take on National League side Chester. That is a 7 o'clock kickoff. One game the day after on Saturday the 20th of July, and that sees Radcliffe Borough, who as you just heard have also been promoted this season. A great campaign for them. They'll take on Lancaster City at the Bowl. That is a 2 o'clock kickoff on Saturday the 20th of July. And then it's a doubleheader on the final day, Sunday the 21st of July. First, it's an early start between Chester and Lancaster City. That is an 11 o'clock kickoff, 11 a.m. that is, at the Bowl, and that will be followed by FC Isle of Man rounding things off by taking on Radcliffe Borough, a 3 o'clock kickoff on Sunday the 21st of July. In terms of tickets, early bird tickets for local and travelling fans are now on sale at £20 for adults and £10 for children, and concessions for all four games. Those prices will increase though to £24 for adults and £12 for children and concessions from the 1st of June. So just do bear that price increase in mind if you're thinking of heading down to the FC Isle of Man Summer Festival of Football from the 19th to the 21st of July.
Manx Radio Sport.
We're hoping to be joined in a few moments' time to go through the Isle of Man football results for today, Saturday the 11th of May 2024. If you've not long joined us, welcome to Saturday Sport Classified on Manx Radio AM 1368 and DAB. And indeed, he has hightailed it down from the sunny shores of Andrus Plainfields, I think it's fair to say. Probably not my best analogy for Andrus Plainfields, but it's been a glorious day up north to go through today's footballing fixtures. Tony Meppham, very good evening and good to see you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Rob. Fantastic. And
you're a little bit out of breath there, Tony.
I'm not too bad. The traffic on the road, you know, obviously people out watching the rally, a glorious day up at Andreas, and a great game of football with a massive crowd. And well done to everybody involved. Really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And some real surprise results in there, particularly when it comes to the Hospital Cup semi-finals. You were at one of those games today. We are still awaiting one result from today, and that is Maluva Douglas High School Old Boys in DPS Limited Division 2. So if you do have any details of those, you're listening out there, please do let us know. 166-177. Well, let's dive in then to the footballing fixtures taking place across the Isle of Man today, starting with the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup semi-finals. Ayr United versus Ramsey and Laxey versus Peel. We'll start, Tony, with the game that you were at today up at Andreas Playingfields. Ayr United still challenging for the Canada Life Men's Premier League title up against the Ramsey side, who've had a good and positive season in the top flight, but seem to, I think you've almost inferred, I guess, they've not really quite had the rub of the green with some of the cup draws they've had this season, coming up against the likes of Ayr United and Peel. Great challenges for them. Ayr United, on paper at least, going into today's game as favourites, but Ramsey producing a shock result today, a great result for the visiting side. They've beaten Ayr United on Ayr United soil by 3-1, Tony.
Yeah, and it just shows you what a few days can do, because midweek on Tuesday, when Ramsey got beat 4-0, they're probably looking at it and going, well, this is going to be sort of deja vu, because Ayr were in good form, but certainly today it didn't happen for them. Yes, it was a close game at one stage, but you know, Ramsey, the first goal after 13 minutes it was, and a good cross in from the left-hand side by Jack Gilbert, and there was Jamie Agnew there to head it in to make it 1-0. Deserved their start. It was a good tempo to the game, and both teams had sort of half chances, but then 12 minutes after that, second goal came in, and this time it was Jack Gilbert from the other side, and from the right, from a free kick, he crossed it in, and it was Graham Kennish was there to head it, tallest probably play on the pitch, and made it 2-0, and just, you could see the Ramsey fans are going absolutely mental. But then in the second half, I thought the start of the second half, Ayr looked really good, and they got a goal back through Declan Cummins, and 2-1 it was, and nice and tight. I think Johnny Shields hit the post, could have made it 2-2, but then a penalty was awarded, and it was difficult to see where we were, Rob, right down the bottom corner, but everyone said the hands were up of the defender, and the ball was placed on the hands of the defender, and you know, Mark Thomas had nothing but penalty. There's the decision. And Dylan Pickles it was who sent the goalkeeper the wrong way to make it 3-1. Ayr United had chances in the second half. Ramsey had chances in the second half. Good save by Nathan Tier towards the end. But, fair result, I think, in the end. And Ramsey absolutely made up with that result. And the final goes ahead on Friday the 24th of May.
So I suppose the key question here is, Tony, after that result in midweek in the league, United were 4-0 winners, now a 3-1 defeat to Ramsey. What do you think has changed in those last few days, most of all, to see Ramsey come away with, in the grand scheme of things, particularly this season, a very impressive result?
Very impressive result. And I just think that, the management team, coaches at Ramsey set the stall out. You could see right from the start that Ramsey were keen to sort of close them down, which they did. And it was just a little bit frustrating for Ayr United to deal with. I think, Danny Oram, who scored the hat-trick midweek, he didn't really get too many opportunities today. But the injury to Sean Kelly cost them dearly, because, you know, Sean, everything seems to go through him. But then in saying that, the substitute, Johnny Shields, came on, and I thought Johnny was quite impressive, to be fair. And everyone just got a massive lift when they got that goal back. But, you know, credit to Ramsey, and, two really good headers. They had chances right the way through. Dylan Pickles, obviously, is always a pain. He'll always cause problems for the defences. But, you know, it was just not Ayr's day. They didn't play particularly well. They played okay, but Ramsey just capitalised on goals when it was needed. And at 2-1, I spoke to Anthony Cooper after the game, the manager, and he just said that he was really nervous, but once they made it 3-1, he thought he could get it over the line, and he did that.
And from Ramsey's perspective, that brings me on nicely to that. I guess you look at what's happened for the club in the last couple of weeks. The combination team crowned Combination One champions, and Ramsey now finding themselves in the final of this year's Hospital Cup. And given the opposition they'll be facing, we'll come to the other semi-final in a second. Must be a very positive atmosphere around the club right now.
Oh, definitely. I know the Baltic will be wild tonight, but I would think wherever they've gone there tonight, they'll be in the clubhouse probably now and a little bit sober at Ramsey, but then they'll go into town later on. And you've got to remember as well, the Cal Cup got through to the semi-final and we're only just beaten 1-0. So there's a lot of good young players coming through, and, you know, just that's what you want from your club, is just give it their all, and whatever happens, happens. They've got a lot of experienced players also in, combination team. when I look at Darren Tartar. He's a good goal scorer, good footballer. And Anthony Bale as well. You know, I didn't realise how quick he was and down that left-hand side. So credit to Ramsey, credit to everyone involved in the club. But it's not all doom and gloom. They've got two big games coming up next week, and they'll be looking to see if they can get some more silverware.
And finally, just before we move on to the other semi-final, Ayr United, that's their Hospital Cup journey brought to an end for this season, but right in the mix at the moment still, in the race for the Canada Life Men's Premier League title. Peel topping the standings at the moment on 64 points, having played all 24 games at this stage. Ayr United, 3 points back on 61 points, but with two games in hand, Tony, so still very much alive in the league for Ayr.
It is, and Tuesday night, a big game against Braddon, because look at sort of Braddon against Rushen. They gave them a bit of a shock. I think they were 2-0 up at one stage and lost 3-2. But Braddon will be looking to spoil the party, because it's been a struggle for them all season. But then the big game is on Friday the 17th, and we asked both clubs to see if they can move it to the Friday, purely because we've got the Junior Cup final on the Saturday. We don't want to play any football then, and both clubs agreed. So what a night that is going to be if United draw or win against Braddon, then they need to take some points away from St Mary's. But they need 4 points out of two games, so it's all in their hands, which is probably the way they want it.
Indeed. Well, let's take another. We'll take a look then at the other Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup semi-final, which took place at Glen Road today. Laxey up against the aforementioned Canada Life Men's Premier League leaders, Peel. And Laxey, we've spoken about at times this season when it comes to the league side of things. They were tipped by quite a lot of people to be challenging up at the top end of the table. That hasn't been the case. They're fifth in the standings, some way off the pace of Peel and Ayr United. Coming up against a Peel side today, who many would have probably had as firm favourites going into this fixture, but a real turnout for the books, Tony. These competitions in Manx football never cease to amaze us, because Laxey, they are through to the final. They will meet Ramsey. Laxey beating Peel today by 2-0, Tony.
They certainly are. Programme tonight hasn't finished yet, but I expect you to give me my P45 after these two predictions today, because Paul Moran has just said, I think your card's marked by Rob.
It's been noted what the predictions have been over the last 24 hours.
Exactly, but that's what makes football like it is. And these people around that keep saying football's dead, no it's not. You look at the two games today, and I've got a report off Dean Turton, so thank you, Dean, for this one. And in the first 10 minutes, both teams cautiously sized each other up. The Miners, which is Laxey, showed promise early on, with George Burrows and Adam Meelan combining forces, only to be denied by Owen Dawson's nimble footwork. Peel's Taylor Andrews made a dash in the box, but his penalty hopes were dashed as quickly as they arose. Ethan Hawley's persistence on the right flank created an opening for Joe Walters, but Luke Doherty was there to shut things down. Lee Gale's chance for Peel was thwarted by Glenn Walker, the goalkeeper for Laxey, after a defensive blunder by Tom Cowan. The game remained evenly matched, with both sides creating but not capitalising on their efforts. Half chances then in the 36th minute. Lewis Moran missed what could have been a game changer for the Peel, sending the ball wide. The breakthrough came on at 38 minutes when George Burrows' relentless effort in the box set up Joe Walters, who executed a stunning diving header, giving the Miners the lead. At the break, it was Laxey who narrowly held on to their lead. Laxey's game plan came straight into action in the second half as Glenn Walker delayed picking up a long Peel ball. Andrew Crennel received a yellow card in the 60th minute for a late challenge on Adam Meelan. Ethan Hawley denied Moran a shot from Peel. Lee Gale's free kick in the 65th minute went over, and Thomas Brown missed a great chance from close range in the front of an open net. The 75th minute brought a pivotal moment. Willie Cowley, the referee, played advantage, leading to a dangerous cross from Ethan Hawley, and it hit Luke Doherty's shin, the Peel defender, and went in to make it 2-0 to Laxey. In the 80th minute, Glenn Walker saved Whitehead's effort from Peel. In the 94th minute, Peel thought they had scored when Whitehead poked home, but it was ruled out after consultation. Laxey also had an offside goal disallowed. After 107 minutes, yes, 17 minutes added time, but that'll be down a lot of it to water breaks, because we had them in both games today. Laxey's energy emerged victorious, securing their place in the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup final. Peel threw everything at them in the second half, but couldn't find a breakthrough. Thanks, Dean.
For Laxey, Tony, after all the expectations from some, not all, but from some, going into the season in the league, and as we've already mentioned, they've not been towards the top this season. But to be there in the Hospital Cup final, Johnny Palmer and his team must be absolutely delighted, and up against the current Premier League leaders.
Absolutely. And, you know, fair play to them, because at the start of the season, Rob, I thought that the players that Laxey had signed, that was enough to get them over the line to win the league. Injuries, yes, Joe Burrows, when you look at one of them, Jordan Cooper, the second one, long-term, good players, they missed out on them. But then when you look at the rest of the sort of players, I thought there's still enough there to get them this result, because, you know, Laxey had the quality there, but it just didn't happen. I watched them against Douglas Royal last week in the quarter-final, and I just thought, nah, it's not going to happen. But then when I saw the team sheet, I did say to you at lunchtime that they looked a lot stronger. And with people like Tiernan Garvey back in there, Ryan Gartland, you also had Jordan Cooper, who was fit. You've got Patience as well, Brody Patience in there. It just looked a real strong side. One or two others back in there as well. And they've got the result. And Laxey be delighted. Peel, obviously, disappointed because, you know, the way the league has turned out for them as well. But that's football.
And from Peel's perspective, very unusual indeed to see them defeat, of course, but not getting on the score sheet today. But from the report you've received there from Dean, they threw absolutely everything at it, but just couldn't get it over the line to get back into the contest.
Yeah, let's give that credit to sort of Laxey's defence, maybe, because, you know, they stopped them from playing. You know, when you look at Lee Gale, I think he's been carrying an injury over the last couple of games. Reece Oates is just coming back from a serious injury. He'll go again next season and look good. Paul Whitehead is just a different beast. He's so physical, but the ball's got to get into him for him to finish off the jobs. But there's plenty of other players around there. Thomas Brown as well, good young player coming through. And, you know, take note of the Cal Cup winners the other night. That was Peel, and congratulations to them. They've got a lot of quality coming through. So it's a learning curve for them, and it's a process that the younger players will learn from. But, you know, just on the day, and it can happen. These are cup games, and you're going for it. You want to play in that final. Laxey have got there. Peel haven't, but Peel's days will come again.
So let's take a look then at the two that will be facing off for the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup in the coming week. Got Ramsey against Laxey here, and Tony, going into this, there may have been people who thought it was almost a certainty that either or both of Peel and Ayr United would make it in. That's proven not to be the case. Laxey and Ramsey, how open is this potential final?
It's open. Again, it goes down to team selection. Ramsey did very well today, but I look at the players that have come in for Laxey has made them a lot stronger. You know, they've had basically four starting first team players to come in. You know, Joe Walters had a wonderful season 2 years ago, but he's been dogged with injury this year. And also, when you look at the rest of them, they all sort of work hard. Ethan Hawley and others in there, Glenn Walker, the goalkeeper, they'll make it difficult to predict a winner. I'll have to sleep on this one for about 5-6 nights on this one, but to be honest with you, because you just don't have a clue where this could go at the moment. So it's down to players' availability as well, because players could have booked to go away on holiday. And it's nicely poised for a great finish of the season. And we're trying to finish on this game if we can. We've got the Paul Henry goal kick to get in, and we're going to play that. There's still question marks when we're going to play it. But certainly this Laxey-Ramsey game is going to be terrific.
Just a quick reminder, Tony, for those who missed it a moment ago, when is it planned that the Hospital Cup final for this year will take place?
Yeah, the Hospital Cup was down for Saturday the 25th, but due to Manchester United and Manchester City getting to the FA Cup final, the police advised the FA that they wanted the kickoff time changed, so it's changed to 3 o'clock. Same happened last year, but the 12 previous finals had been at 5:30, so we had no choice. We've got to change. And we've managed to secure the bowl. It's not our property, so we've got to book it like the rest. And thanks to Douglas and District, who had it booked partially and have allowed us the time slot. So that will kick off at 7 o'clock on Friday the 24th of May.
Excellent. Laxey versus Ramsey in the Hospital Cup final to come. Well, there was a selection of league games taking place, and crucially in DPS Limited Division 2. Three games were originally scheduled. Only two have taken place today, and that is because Jim's versus Castletown. Sadly, Jim's unable to field a team in that game, therefore awarded as an away walkover to Castletown. But nevertheless, two other games taking place, and one of those a crucial one over at Billy Goat Park as Foxdale took on Governors Athletic. Foxdale within reach of being crowned Division 2 champions going into today's game. came up against the Governors Athletic side, who will have been hoping to provide a stern test to Foxdale on their home soil. But Foxdale, congratulations to them. They have been crowned DPS Limited Division 2 champions, and in style as well, Tony. Foxdale 8, Governors Athletic 1.
Yeah, they certainly did. And thanks for the timings, Luke Stewart, for the goals. And it was Charlie Harrison, I think, who scored after 22 minutes. And then Kevin Pullman might have been a penalty on 49. Then it was Jay Chatwood got his first of the game on 57 minutes. Charlie Harrison got his second on 60. And then Liam Cannon got one on 62 minutes. And then Charlie Harrison completed his hat-trick on the 70th minute. Then Jay Chatwood thought, well, I'm not having this. So he scored one on the 76th minute. So he got his second of the game. And then that was 7-1. And Jay Chatwood spoiled Charlie's party because he got a hat-trick as well right on the 80th minute. Absolutely tremendous game. Well done to Foxdale. They finished up 8-1 winners. And Foxdale will be presented with the trophy on Tuesday.
Right, well, so that means that the DPS Limited Division 2 table, still with games to play, of course, but that means Foxdale top now on 57 points after 21 games. Onken in second on 21 games for 53 as well. So Foxdale winning DPS Limited Division 2 with one game to spare. And Tony, still at the moment, of course, things could change going into the final game, but Foxdale still unbeaten in DPS Limited Division 2 this season. That's now 18 wins, 3 draws and no defeats. A phenomenal record.
Oh, it's a great record. And to go unbeaten throughout the season is brilliant. And that Division 2 has been tight, hasn't it? At the halfway stage, we were looking at it. You had Colby in there. You had Michael, sort of causing all sorts of problems. You had Onken. And, you know, Foxdale were just sort of hanging in. And they've done it. And I think it's 94-95, last time they were promoted into the old First Division, I think it was. It might have been just then the Premier League. So here they go again. And, you know, Foxdale, what's caused that? I think the re-signing of Jay Chatwood. You know, he's a dad as well now, so it suited him to go back home, if you like. And, you know, there's some really good young players in there. Jason Charmer, one. Charlie Harrison, big admirers of. But Matthew Cubbins come in, done a great job at the back for them. Stephen Bettridge is in there. And then a little bit more experience in Kevin Pullman, right in that centre midfield. And, you know, Andy Ball, who's a very experienced, good goalkeeper. And as you say, Foxdale, worthy champions. And I'm sure the Baltic is absolutely going Beswick at the moment.
Could well be. But just wider confirmation outside of it as well. We already know that both Foxdale and Onken are being promoted to the Canada Life Men's Premier League this season. Relegation from the top flight has already also been confirmed. It'll be Brad and Moran heading down. We'll have a bit more of a look ahead to how those teams might fare in the respective divisions next season, next week on Saturday Sports Classified. Tony, the one outstanding result that we hadn't had at the start of the programme in DPS Limited Division 2 was between Maloo and Douglas High School. Old boys, have we received any further updates?
I haven't received that one at all, so I can make a phone call when you're playing one of the other interviews and see if we can get that score and scorers for you.
Fantastic. Well, whilst we're waiting on that in the meantime as well, just elsewhere in DPS Limited Division 2, one thing you touched on a few minutes ago is that the there is still confirmation to be had around the Paul Henry Gold Cup. Nothing quite decided yet. But looking outside of Foxdale and Onken in first and second, respectively, there, Castletown, they have now played all their league fixtures after being awarded an away walkover today. So that's Castletown third after 22 games on 45 points. Colby fourth at the moment after 21 games on 43 points. Michael United now played all 22 in fifth on 38 points there, looking at the statistics we've got in front of us. If there was to be confirmation of the Paul Henry Gold Cup with the teams as they stand, like I say, nothing is confirmed yet, things could change. But Castletown and Colby, how could they fare, do you think, against the likes of Foxdale and Onken in that competition as it stands?
I think Colby have got an awful lot to do yet, Rob, to qualify, because they, I think, play Foxdale on Tuesday. So they need 3 points in that one. That's not going to give me. Douglas High School All Boys have got Onken to play. That's provisionally down for next Friday.
And Douglas High School All Boys have only played 19 games. Well, exactly. It will be 20 following today against Mullough.
Exactly. So they play midweek All Boys. That's game two rearranged out of the way. And then game three will be on the Friday night, which will be All Boys against Onken. So I think it's in All Boys' hands because, you know, All Boys against Onken, that will be tight. Colby against Foxdale. Foxdale won't want to receive that trophy with a defeat facing them against Colby. So I think, you know, it's a pivotal night on Tuesday, but I think Old Boys are just going to sneak through if they can get that result against Onken.
And just quickly, like, taking a look at the other game that's taking place today, just part of, I think, how Tony's described it as the cleaning up process to make sure the fixtures are completed. They are now completed in Canada Life Combination 1. The one remaining game in that division taking place today between Braddon and Moran. An entertaining game by the looks of things. Braddon beating Moran on home soil by 3-2.
Yeah, it was, and that's a good result, I think, for Braddon against Moran. And Lax Medley, I think it was, who got one. Charlie Knight got a goal, and Thomas Healy, that's Paul Healy's son, with one. So good finish for Braddon, and Braddon will be looking through. And thanks to Dean, we've just got the Old Boys score through. Old Boys beat Maloo 9-1.
That's a substantial result. And yeah, Tony, actually, let's just put that into perspective then with the statistics that we've got in front of us. So that'll now be Douglas High School Old Boys after 20 games. So with two still to play, moves them up into fifth. That they leapfrog Michael United. Old Boys then onto 41 points behind Colby in fourth on 43. So it's still all quite close, Tony.
Certainly is tight. And, you know, it's all to play for. The Paul Henry, we're struggling to get it in. We might just have to play the final on grass because the plan that I had was to play the semi-finals maybe a week on Monday and play the final on Thursday at the bowl, because we can't play it on the Friday because we've got the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup final. The bowl's booked, so we can't get it on. So there's a little bit of work to do on that one, but don't panic, boys. I'm having loads of messages coming through. Are you going to play it? Absolutely. We'll get that final played.
And let's just take a look at that fixture, that score that's just come in. Thank you very much for that being sent through to us. Much appreciated indeed. Maloo 1, Douglas High School Old Boys 9. It's an emphatic result there for Old Boys. We've already mentioned it could be well in contention for a place in the Paul Henry Gold Cup, which is yet to be decided. But Douglas High School Old Boys, it's been mentioned on a few occasions. It was a tough start to the season after being relegated from the Canada Life Men's Premier League last season. But since then, they've won this year's GH Corlett Woods Cup and also back in contention towards the top places in DPS Limited Division 2. Where's the change come from, Tony? Where has this real turn in form for Old Boys come from in recent months?
I think it's down to a little bit of experience coming back in. Craig Stewart came back into the team. I think, if I remember rightly, the start of the season, Robbie Ward was missing. They didn't have Sam Holliday. Sam Holliday came back into sticks. And I just think, you know, a little bit of form from the older players. Nick Bass, he's been playing really well lately. And you've also got, you know, people like Chris Coxon in there. And I think Danny Gellin was key. I think Danny missed a little bit towards the start, middle of the season. And when he came up, and let's not forget Jacob Stone, any player to score 7 in any game takes some doing. And that's what he did against Pulley in the Cup. But the problem is with Old Boys, it is an ageing team. You know, they're 36, 37. Martin King, you know, again, has been strong at the back. You had Drew Ward in there as well, but they can't keep going like they are. It's getting harder and harder for them, and all they can do is pass their ability on to the younger players and hopefully pick some players up, and that's something I'm sure Johnny Gotland will work on in the summer. As long as he doesn't take anything from Corinthians, that's fine. But certainly, you know, Old Boys... a team that were expected to be up towards the top of the table, and the way it's gone at the end of the season, probably going to finish fourth. They've probably achieved what was best for them.
And a quick mention for Maloo, of course, as well. So that means they'll mid-table, seventh in the table to end the season after that particular game. And that puts them 8 off now Michael United now in sixth after that Old Boys win. For today. Oh no, I beg your pardon, in fact it's 11 points still of course Maloo with that defeat. So what's next for Maloo, do you think? Maybe to just start to try challenging with those teams above them maybe in the next campaign.
It's going to be hard for them to challenge at the top of Division 2, I think, because when you look at it, the combination team stopped about 3 or 4 weeks ago. The players, injuries short of players and stuff like that. They've been struggling for two teams over, you know, sort of last year, but credit to them this year. They've had the two teams. That's what they've just got to work on is, you know, make sure that they've got enough players to field two teams, and then the quality will shine through. I noticed on the team sheet midweek, there was a lot of good players missing. Paddy Cooper was one, Dean Kinley two. You know, those sort of players would challenge for a place in Premiership sides. But well done to them. I think they've sort of done as best as they could have done. And it's just regroup again and see if they can do 24-25 season some justice for the club.
plenty of thoughts going forward. Tony Meppen, thank you very much, as always, indeed. Let's just have a quick turn to motorsport now. And, of course, it was the final day today of the 2024 Manx Rally, of what's been some brilliant racing on closed roads across the Isle of Man over the last 48 hours. If you have not yet heard of the final results after the 15 special stages that have taken place, overall winners James Williams and Ross Whittock in the Hyundai i20, managing to finish in an overall time of 1 hour, 44 minutes and 8.2 seconds across the 15 stages. So that takes them first overall and, of course, first in F-Class as well. And a commanding result for them as well, because they've finished just over 4 minutes ahead of next in F-Class and second overall Steve Wood and Kenny Hull, who managed to close down the gap a little bit in the final stages of the event before Williams and Whittock just managed to open up that gap a little bit themselves more, finishing ahead. Williams and Whittock finishing ahead of Wood and Hull by 4 minutes and 4.5 seconds. Making up the top three then overall and in F-Class, Hugh Hunter and Rob Fagg in the Ford Fiesta Rally 2. Overall time of 1 hour, 48 minutes, 21.9 seconds. So only 9.2 seconds off the pace of Steve Wood and Kenny Hull in the end. So good running from Hunter and Fagg out there as well. The winners in D-Class, the number 12 crew of Darren Atkinson and Matthew Daniels in the Ford Escort Mark II. An overall time of 1 hour, 49 minutes and 58 seconds exactly. So that's fifth overall, but first in D-Class as well. Second in D-Class, number 14, Damian Toner and Aidan Gallagher in the Ford Escort, a time of 1 hour, 52 minutes, 31.2 seconds. So we're just under 2 minutes behind the D-Class winners, Damian Toner and Aidan Gallagher. In E-Class, William Hill and Richard Morton Crozier in the Ford Fiesta Rally 3, 1 hour, 51 minutes, 38 seconds exactly to take E-Class there, and making up the top three in E-Class, Philip Hopkins and Sam Allen in the Mitsubishi Evo 6. They finish second in the time of 1 hour, 52 minutes, 31.6 seconds, and they just managed to finish just under a minute ahead of third in E-Class, Sam Tuzel and Matt Edwards in the Ford Fiesta Rally 2. Great battle between those two crews for second and third today. Tuzel and Edwards finishing in 1 hour, 53 minutes, 28.1 seconds. Taking a look to the historic rallying groups as well. The quickest time in the H5, Will Rowlands and Emir Hall in the Ford Escort Mark II RS 1800. 1 hour, 54 minutes, 26.4 seconds there. So that's topping the historic rally times. And there was a fantastic battle in behind as well. So Seb Perez and Gary McElhinney in the Porsche 911 RS finishing 0.1 seconds ahead of Richard Hill and Patrick Cooper in the Ford Escort RS 1800. What a battle that was as well. So congratulations to all those who've taken part in this year's 2024 Manx Rally. If you do want to see the full timings from across the respective categories throughout the 2024 Manx Rally, head on over to the link which is available at the Manx Auto Sport website. And it was a bumper entry this year in fantastic conditions for the 2024 Manx Rally. 150 entries in total and 206 applications were received overall. We heard from event director Mark Ellison earlier this week. They're very happy indeed around that. And looking at motorsport, of course, if we're staying with that, then it's been a very big day on two wheels over in the big preparations ahead of the Isle of Man TT races later this month, because the 2024 Northwest 200 meeting has concluded in the last few minutes with the final of six races taking place today on the Triangle Circuit. Six races today. The final superbike contest over six laps has just finished. Glenn Irwin taking top spot. That's an 11th superbike win of the Northwest 200 for the Northern Irishman. He broke the superbike win record for the meeting yesterday with his 10th win, beating the previous record of 9, jointly set by Michael Rutter and Joey Dunlop. Just taking a quick look back over the results then. In the opening race of the day, the four-lap super twin contest, Peter Hickman, after qualifying on pole, beating Richard Cooper to top spot in that one. Race two was the first of the superbike races today. Glenn Irwin, that's where he did get that record 10th win, edging out Davey Todd in a fantastic contest on the Triangle Circuit today. Race 3, wow, this was a thrilling race indeed. The Supersport 6-lap race. Davey Todd, the first of two wins for him today, and the second of his hat-trick of wins. We'll come to the other of those third wins and the race after that, but Davey Todd winning the 6-lap Supersport race ahead of Richard Cooper, with Michael Dunlop coming in a close third in what was a thrilling contest between the front three. Mike Brown also right in the mix in fourth as well. The Super Stock race, the fourth race of the day. The original start was halted due to a red flag, but the race restarted also over six laps. Davey Todd making it back-to-back wins there, and a hat-trick of wins for the Milwaukee BMW rider there today as well. So Davey Todd, a great run for him, a hat-trick of wins at the Northwest 200 this year. Drama before the start of the restart. In fact, Michael Dunlop was in fact a non-starter. We understand this is due to the fact that he did not go out onto the sighting lap, which is understood to be mandatory. So Michael Dunlop was a non-starter in that race. And in that particular race, what a story it was as well. John McGuinness at 52 years of age getting on the podium. Third place for him in the Super Stock race. Peter Hickman finishing second, we should bear in mind. But John McGuinness, his first Northwest 200 podium since 2012. So 12 years, and what a special moment that was for the 23-time TT winner. John McGuinness getting on the podium after a great battle in the final lap with James Hillier, it must be said. Dean Harrison had been running in second place for much of the race, but was a retirement with just two laps to go. The second of the Super Twin races took place in the penultimate action of the Northwest 200 meeting this afternoon. Again, it was Peter Hickman coming out on top. Deja vu from the first race. Peter Hickman first, ahead of Richard Cooper in second. And in the last few minutes, the final contest, the Superbike six-lap race. Glenn Irwin, as we've mentioned, taking his 11th Superbike win at the Northwest 200, ahead of Davey Todd in second. He's had a fantastic meeting at the Northwest. And Dean Harrison recovering from that disappointment of that retirement in the Superstock race earlier in the day to finish third. Michael Dunlop fourth, Paul Jordan in fifth, Michael Rutter in sixth, Craig Neave in seventh, Mike Brown in eighth, James Hillier in ninth, and rounding out the top 10 is Dom Herbertson. So those are your results from the Northwest 200, the final race meet there. And all to come in the next couple of weeks, of course, that big preparation for a lot of those riders for the Isle of Man TT races getting underway on the 27th of May on the Snaefell Mountain Course. Well, coming towards the end of the show here, we're going to take a quick look at the Commonwealth Games and Commonwealth Games Association. Women involved in sport on the Isle of Man are being encouraged to sign up for the Commonwealth Women's Leadership Programme for 2024-25. The initiative is open to female figures operating both professional and voluntary capacity to help them drive on with their careers in their chosen field. So what does the programme involve? Well, Louise Corkill of Isle of Man Sport was awarded a place on it in 2022. She's told Manx Radio this week what it entails and the benefits she's had from taking part.
So it started in 2018 kind of with a pilot scheme, and that was around bringing coaches to a Commonwealth Games. And following the success of that, in 2022 they initiated the Commonwealth Women's Leadership Programme, and it's aimed at supporting and empowering women from the Commonwealth on their own personal journey towards becoming an influential leader and an agent of change in the field of sport within their community. So there's a £5,000 financial scholarship, if you like, and a comprehensive kind of mentoring program alongside it to assist with an individual's program to help them achieve what they'd like to within their community.
And of course, you were already awarded a place on this program previously. So from your perspective, what benefits have you got from this program?
Well, it was a fantastic opportunity for me. I used some of the scholarship to go to the International Working Group 8 conference in New Zealand, and that's on, it's a women in sport conference, one of the largest organizations in the world promoting gender equity and gender equality in sport. And that was a fantastic opportunity just to network and meet with other like-minded individuals, but also to share and exchange knowledge and ideas and challenges that people were facing across the world, not just within our community here. So that was really beneficial for me to get out of my own bubble, if you like, and into a different environment. And the second thing, the international mentor was a really, really beneficial part. I met with my mentor, who was based in Birmingham, on a monthly basis for just over a year, which was a really great opportunity to check and challenge, to discuss ideas and things I've come across and experiences that I've had to help me grow as an individual within my role.
One of the things you mentioned before was networking and the chance you've had to meet other people within the sporting side of things of the Commonwealth, exchange ideas and whatnot. So how important are those doorways, I guess, into having more opportunities to meet more people and learn extra things in this role?
So I think it's really easy to stay within your own environment, within your own network, and the opportunity to go and meet other people, particularly from different areas, and to explore their ideas and their challenges just provides a different perspective, which I don't think you get necessarily. And I think being from the Isle of Man, it's particularly, you've got the sea in the way majority of the time. So it's a fantastic opportunity to network with other people from across the world that you might not otherwise be able to meet. So that all of the women on the programme I've never met before, and we have kind of created a small community within that. I've just had contact from the CGF today actually regarding the alumni group, which will tie the 2022 and 2023 cohorts together. And I think having that network of people and opening those doors to allow others to connect from a variety of different backgrounds just helps strengthen everyone's ability to affect change, really.
Obviously, the world of sport is such a diverse place, so many different disciplines and different communities here on the Isle of Man and, of course, across the world. So how encouraging is it, I guess, that if there are those who are maybe looking to get involved in the programme in some way, that there's so many different sports and different passions that people can engage with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're fortunate here on the island to have such a wealth of sporting opportunity with a variety of different sports. But this programme in particular is very, very open. If you're involved as a coach, an official, an administrator, even in performance services, physio, psychology, there's a whole host of different routes or opportunities to be involved in this. It's not specific to any one area within sport. So even if you're a volunteer rather than necessarily in a paid role, a lot of the women are from a variety of different backgrounds and areas, different sports, different organisations, international federations, smaller governing bodies. There's a real variety and mix, and the opportunity to be involved is one that I would encourage anyone to get involved with, regardless of your role within sport. I think we also have a fantastic Isle of Man Commonwealth Games Association here on the island. Mickey Swindale, the Vice President, has been really supportive since she's taken on her role with the Isle of Man CGA in terms of pushing this forward. So if anyone is interested, I would really encourage them to get in touch.
Louise Corkill of Isle of Man Sport there on the Commonwealth Women's Leadership Programme for 2024-25. And if you'd like to find out more details or are potentially looking to sign up, applications for the programme are open until the 15th of June, and further details can be found by contacting iomcga@outlook.com. So applications for the programme open until the 15th of June, and further details can be found by contacting iomcga@outlook.com. That's all we have time for on Saturday Sport Classified this week. Thank you very much for joining us on Manx Radio AM 1368 and DAB. We'll now be handing back over to Christy De Haven over on our FM frequency. Have yourself a wonderful evening in this glorious weather here on the Isle of Man, and enjoy the rest of your weekend as well. But in the meantime, from us, it is bye for now.